3 p.m. on Mondays, win, lose, or draw, we always welcome in our good guy. Our good guy, that was a weird way of saying it. Browns analyst Nathan Zagura on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Nathan, how you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. How are you doing?
I love that energy. No, I'm doing all right. I mean, it was a weekend. What are we going to do here? I actually will say, like, I'm not, you know, Captain Brown and Orange Glasses right now. I actually thought they played well enough to win on Sunday. Like, I didn't feel as bad about the game overall as I did against Washington. That feels like a step in the right direction, no?
Yeah, I just think when you look at it kind of in sum, unfortunately, you are 1-5 and you've lost, you know, four games in a row. You have had in three of those games. I don't think Washington, you did have a chance. So in that case, it was better than that performance. You had opportunities late in the game to either tie or win those games against teams that, you know, are struggling in their own right and were unable to do so. And I think it's just kind of the familiarity of what's happening and the issues that we have, whether it be, you know, penalties down near the goal line for 2 weeks in a row, whether it be drop passes that have plagued the team all season, whether it be too many sacks that have plagued the team all season, whether it be an inability to pass for 200 yards, an inability to produce 300 yards, an inability to score 20 points in a game where for the second time in 3 weeks you got a touchdown from your defense and or special team. So I think it's more kind of the culmination of that frustration of weeks and weeks of unfortunately seeing all too familiar signs that are in large part associated with struggling football teams, and that's exactly what the Browns are.
Is there a fire alarm going on in the background?
There is. Yeah, just went off.
I believe we call that an analogy. No, is it a euphemism? I don't know. Is it too early to say that this season is becoming about something other than winning?
Yes. What do you mean?
Well, just, I mean, have we shifted to, I know winning is always the goal on any given Sunday. You can't really abandon that. But are we getting close to shifting to maybe thinking about next year and kind of evaluating who's going to be here, who's not going to be here?
I mean, I think you're always evaluating everything. I don't think so yet. I think that if things continue down this path, you know, after the bye week, perhaps there's a different perspective on the season. But you haven't played a single game in your division yet. You've got two of them back-to-back at home that obviously, you know, if you can find a way to win those two games, then all of a sudden things look a little bit different than they currently do right now. So, no, I think it's far too early for that, despite the fact that, you know, this team is it's struggling in a manner in which none of us really thought was possible.
Nathan, looking to, I guess it's the defense and Miles' performance because Miles had the big field goal attempt blocked there. But I don't think it's crazy to say. I think the defense tightened up on a lot of different things. What was the difference this week as maybe opposed to certainly the Washington game?
The difference in the defense?
Yeah.
I thought they played, for the most part, a good game. Big plays, similarly to last week. It was big plays that kind of that rued the day. But I thought they did a great job against Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley had come into this game, you know, averaging 130 total yards per game. He had come into this game having at least 80 yards rushing in every single game. And I thought the Browns actually did a really nice job on him in this game. Saquon Barkley, season low, 18 carries for 47 yards, so not even three a carry, and they held him to just 54 total yards. So that was almost 80 yards below his season average. He was averaging 108.8 yards per game on the ground. So 60 yards off of his rushing pace, 80 yards off of his total pace. That was good. You still were victimized. You had a 34-yard catch and run to Grant Calcaterra. You had a 45-yard catch and run touchdown to Devonta Smith on, you know, that shouldn't happen. And then a 40-yarder, obviously that big play down to A.J. Brown at the end, who also had a 20-plus yard touchdown. So it was kind of big plays that did you in. But I thought defensively, yeah, there were certainly some good things, but you can't get beat by a mesh concept in man twice the way that they did, where it was just kind of wide open and easy for Devonta Smith. And so they're going to have to do a better job and clean that up. When you play man, obviously that's a concept you know you're going to get, and typically the Browns have done a better job with that, but in this one they were not able to do so. I think, you know, JOK continues to play at a very, very high level, a sack, a tackle for a loss, a pass defensed. I thought Rodney McLeod had a great game. I thought Mahmoud Diabate at the second level brought a lot in this one with seven tackles, a physicality that was good to see. But ultimately not enough up front in terms of the pass rush, and Jalen Hurts had a little bit of time to go, but I thought we did a great job against their run. I thought that really did stand out as a positive in this game.
Nathan Zagura, Browns analyst in the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So one thing that did go better this week, going in the right direction, is the run game. How much of that do you think was on the backs, who, again, everybody combined for 100 yards on the dot, and how much of that do you think happened up front?
I think in a run game, it's everybody. And, you know, Pierre Strong, I thought, brought some nice juice. 8 carries for 43 yards. He had 2 catches for 35, so 78 total yards on his 10 touches. I'd like to see him get more. I liked what we saw from him when Jerome Ford went down. So I thought that was very good. The line did better. And I thought we ran a few more under center, kind of traditional Kevin Stefanski, you know, outside zone runs, getting their line moving horizontally and allowing the running back to pick that lane when they put their foot in the ground and get north-south. So I thought, yeah, there were definitely some better things in the ground game. And I think, you know, the final numbers in terms of completion percentage for Deshaun Watson were good. But and obviously in the second half, he was better than he was in the first half. But, I mean, still 168 yards. The yards per attempt still not really where you need them to be. And you're just not able to get the ball in the end zone. I think that's the problem. Third down woes have continued to be a major, major issue for this Cleveland Browns team, and it was not until the second half of this game that you were able to convert a third down. 5 sacks is still too many. So offensively, we know it. Everybody's kind of written about it. It's been historically bad, and it unfortunately, you know, you have got to find ways to score the football and to get touchdowns. And the Browns have not had offensively a non-garbage time touchdown since the first drive against the Raiders. And that's why you've lost, you know, 4 in a row, big picture, but really 3 in a row.
Are the Browns... Oh, sorry, bud. Go ahead.
No. No, that was it. Just from that moment of the opening drive touchdown.
Are the Browns caught between the two offenses, what Kevin has liked to do traditionally and what Ken Dorsey maybe was brought here to kind of bring in and add to what Ken did or Kevin does?
Yeah, I don't know. And that was something that Kevin Stefanski was asked. I think they did find some success in this game, not only with the under center Stefanski runs, but then also doing some of the wide RPOs where you got the receivers way out wide and just kind of ran your line against their box and was able for Deshaun to read that. And we had success running the football that way. I think it just comes down to execution. It comes down to, you know, same thing, shooting yourself in the foot, having the penalties. The Browns have more offensive penalties than any team in the league. They're averaging a penalty almost on 1 out of every 11 offensive plays. It's an untenable way to play football. They had 7 penalties against the Eagles, all 7 on the offense. So that's not a way to win. And so I think it's a combination of things. I think it's a combination of penalties on offense. I think it's a combination of when you scheme something up that produces a big play opportunity in the pass game, either it feels like pressure disrupts it, or the quarterback doesn't necessarily see it. And sometimes when the quarterback does see it and rips it, it ends up being dropped. And so it's just kind of a number of symptoms that are causing the Browns to really lag offensively. It's not like the Eagles were great in this game. Let's just be honest about it. In that place, they were booing them. They were ready after the Browns got that defensive touchdown, the block field goal, or special teams touchdown, block field goal returned by Rodney McLeod. It was Boo Bird City in Philadelphia. And the Browns, they just still could not find a way to ultimately win this game and get the football into the end zone.
Nathan, we haven't talked about this yet, but the last drive for the Browns, you're 3rd and goal on the 3, Zach Zinter false start. And then that was the Deshaun pass to Njoku. Then you go to 4th down, Jed Wills takes you to another false start. Now it's 4th and goal at the 13. Kevin decides to kick. At that moment, I'm just kind of curious if you had heard Kevin kind of talk through decision when you needed 7 with, I think it was 3:54 to go. Why take 3 there?
Because, I mean, what is the likely, if you take the 3 there, you still had your defense, which you believe in, right? As you said, it was almost 4 minutes left, 3 timeouts and the 2-minute warning. You just needed to stop them from getting multiple first downs, which is something your defense typically does pretty well. And unfortunately, they weren't able to do it. I think once you were at 4th and 13, just the percentage, they were going to go for it from the 8. But from the 13, that's a pretty low percentage conversion because they know it's got to get into the end zone. There's just no space, you know, vertically to stretch them. I think it's just such a low percentage play. You take the points, and then you've got a good defense that you were counting on to get you the football back. And unfortunately, they just were not able to do that at the end of that game. But those false starts, I mean, it's so similar to Washington. You started off at the 2, end up kicking from the 12 because of the false starts, because of the penalties. And that's what ends up happening here. And that's good teams don't do that. And bad teams do. And that's how bad teams, you know, come up short in games that probably they should have a better chance to win.
Nathan, how much do you think, what is it, for the four of the first six games and certainly the last three games on the road, how much of that do you think is played into this?
Just that they've been on the road, you mean?
Yeah, especially three straight road games, kind of.
I don't, because, you know, the Giants game was at home, and it was similar in terms of the penalties and inability to execute at a high level. And week one at home was not very good for you either. Your only win has come on the road, week two down in Jacksonville. So do I think that? I don't think that's a big factor. I think, honestly, for a team that's struggling, going on the road and being able to kind of make it an us-against-the-world mentality is probably helpful, gets away from some of the noise. But unfortunately, you know, they just have not been able to capitalize or put together for 60 minutes good, clean football and enough offensive football to win games.
What's the one thing, if you can change, I make you a sport god, the football god for one day, you can change one thing and it'll help you win the Cincinnati game, what is it?
You've got to not shoot yourself in the foot. If we could say, all right, we're not going to make any of the self-inflicted wounds in this game, I feel like you have a decent chance to win. There are things, I'm sure a lot of people are surprised that after hearing Kevin's Fancy that there are not going to be changes to certain things, and perhaps there will be changes that we just don't know about, you know, publicly per se. Obviously, something's got to change. And it's got to start with, I think, the whole week of and the way that, you know, you prepare for this game and then the way that you're able to go out and execute. Because playing the way that the Browns currently are playing on offense is not good enough to win football games. And that is why they are where they are. I mean, defensively, have you been the number one defense like you were a year ago? No, that's very difficult to do year after year in the NFL. Just is one of those things that does not happen often. But it's still a good defense and a defense that has played well enough, by and large, for you to be in games and have an opportunity to win. So it's just going to come down to the offense executing and not inflicting wounds that put them in situations that make it more difficult for them to be successful.
Nathan, it's been a rough start to the season, man. No polish in that, but I think you and Andrew come together really nicely. So much fun hear you guys. And listen, I know these aren't always easy, but I sure as hell appreciate your time, bud.
Yeah, you got it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much. Browns analyst Nathan Zagur on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'm torn between what is the obvious that I think... Listen, guys, I don't know if they're playing for Deshaun right now. I really don't. I don't know if they're playing for Kevin either. But this was a very winnable game for the Cleveland Browns, and I can tell you exactly when they lost it. It was somewhere between first and goal at the 8 and Kevin Stefanski's decision to kick a field goal from 31 yards and trust the defense to get a stop with 4 minutes left and give them the ball back. And I'll be honest with you, there's a part of me that thought about coming out and just saying, this is on Kevin. That's bad math. You were in the red zone even after the two false starts and the lack of execution. You were right there at the 13. And I know it's a zero-sum game. You either get into the end zone or you turn over on downs. But I'll be honest with you guys, it wasn't just about Kevin Stefanski. And when you have a false start on third and goal at the 3, inexcusable. Okay, well, that's a rookie. Then Deshaun has the incompletion to David Njoku. It is going to be fourth and goal from the 8. And then Jed Wills, who I actually got to say, like, I didn't think Jed played that poorly yesterday. I know my bar is super low here. I actually had one of my favorite moments of Jed Wills as a Cleveland Brown when Nick Harris clearly blew out his leg, whatever that is. And Nick Harris, who's been bitten by the injury bug, is as bad as anybody I've ever seen. Any time that guy gets a chance, injury. And so to see Jed Wills go up to, you know, Nick Harris in the cart and love him up in a real way when Nick Harris was breaking down actually made me really like Jed for about 5 minutes. And then I kept watching the game. But I really will say, like, I thought that was a great moment. You know, it's funny. Like, I really don't feel all that bad out of this game. A lot of it is because I expected to lose. A lot of it is because it kind of went where I expected it to go. But the other part is, okay, I can sell myself on Myles Garrett making a huge play. Ronnie McLeod getting another touchdown, the Jed moment with Nick Harris. But Jed being the guy that commits the false start on fourth and goal to make it fourth and goal to 13. If it's not one of those two things, then it's Kevin's decision-making. And listen, I understand that Kevin is grasping at straws. You know, Kevin keeps saying, and here's the thing that I really do think this bears paying attention here. The number one thing that I've heard about Kevin Stefanski, the number one reason why Kevin Stefanski is here and allegedly in a bad way. And one of the things that is thought to be a reason why Kevin Stefanski is a two-time coach a year is that he's the same guy in every scenario. Like, he doesn't buckle under pressure. I think we're seeing Kevin Stefanski buckle under pressure. And whether that's the weight of being forced to play Deshaun Watson, whether that's the weight of playing Deshaun Watson in an offense that just clearly is not working, whether that is having literally nothing to go to on offense. I mean, even yesterday, they ran the ball better than they had. Guys, it was 100 yards and 25 carries. That's fine, but you didn't really have any explosive plays. Your best run of the game was Deontay Foreman, and that got called back for a holding penalty, which I thought was complete trash, by the way. I thought Deontay continued to show that if you just keep giving him reps, he might actually give you something. But yeah, I mean, hell, you got some good run out of Pierre Strong. But like, the best thing offensively was either 10 for 10 with Deshaun late in the game, or it was a running game. And so, like, I'm loath to put all the loss on Kevin, because that's a gross oversimplification. They lost offensively the same way they've lost every game. Deshaun isn't good enough. There aren't enough explosive plays. The running game isn't good enough, even if it was better. The offensive line was kind of better, but Vic Fangio, the only time Vic Fangio got home is when he decided to send more than four guys. And when he did that, they easily got home. Is that on Deshaun not calling out the blitzes? Is it on the center not calling out the blitzes? Is it on both? I don't know. I think if you go back, and I thought Coach Riz, Lance Reisling, did a great job last week on Cleveland.com, kind of segmenting, all right, these two sacks were on Deshaun, this was on this player, this was on this, this was on this. You can do that every week. And so none of this is to suggest that it's easy to win in game. I think where the Browns are really failing is they're just not making any big decisions. It's okay if you want to keep Deshaun out there. You probably should change something somewhere else. All right, Deshaun's going to stay at quarterback, but we're going to have a different play caller. Or, hey, Deshaun's going to stay at quarterback, but we're going to go ahead and run the full Dorsey offense and try to juggle these two offenses. Okay. These guys on the offensive line don't have a job next week. I don't know. Amari Cooper doesn't play until he remembers how to catch. So I do think what's killing the Browns is not that they're making too many changes. It's that they're making none. But I don't think there was a more catch-22 Kevin Stefanski's in a no-win situation than that fourth and goal at 13. There's no you don't need three there. And you can try and sell me on, well, you take the three there, and if the defense gets the stop, then you can go ahead and have a chance to win. You still need a touchdown. So in my head, what's easier? Scoring the zero-sum thing, right? Or the all-or-nothing thing. Find the end zone on fourth and 13, fourth and goal from the 13. So find the touchdown there, and then if the defense gets a stop on the other side, then you go play for three. Or you go for three there and likely need 80 yards and a cloud of dust from the offense. And Kevin chose three when you needed seven. When you were 13 yards from the goal. And again, either one of these could have been the wrong answer. But the wrong answer is, when you have a chance at the goal line, you got to go for it. And your defense will be, well, no, because you can't trust Deshaun in that situation. He's on the field. Doesn't matter if you can trust him. He's in that opportunity. So unless you're going to put Jameis on the field, which is all anybody wants right now, unless you're going to put Jameis on the field, no, go for the end zone. Because Kevin Stefanski, from last year would have the cojones to make that call. I would rather lose on fourth and forever in the red zone at fourth and 13. I have to keep saying these numbers out loud because I feel like we're starting to do Steiner math on this. I'd rather lose going for a touchdown there, even as long as the odds say they are. Yeah, guys, you've been in position to win all year in that situation. Give it a chance. Because settling for three and trusting your defense, guys, the defense had been on the field a lot that game. Either one of them were going to lose you the game. But I think in the event you're looking for that spark, everybody's looking for the spark, getting a 31-yard field goal there in the spark. So my big concern right now, and I think this is something we have to watch from now on, I don't think Kevin is being Kevin every day. I don't think Kevin's steady hand as a play caller or as a head coach, and there are valid reasons for this. So this is not me just teeing off on Kevin. Kevin didn't lose you that game, by the way. It was the two false start. That's the moment. You can give it to Zinter. You can give it to Jed. We can split the difference. I don't really give a damn. But when you were third and three, or sorry, when you're third and goal to three, that's the moment. You cannot have mistakes at that moment. The problem is Kevin, the offensive coordinator, got jobbed by Kevin, the head coach, because these mistakes keep happening and there are no repercussions for mistakes. It's just we're going to keep doing the same damn thing. So is it on Kevin? Is it on Deshaun? Is it on it's on all of them. And until one thing changes, you don't have to change everything. One thing changes, none of us are going to expect different results. Darryl Ryder next on 92.3 The Fan. I'll be honest with you. I think I was numb by the time that the Browns game came along by 1 o'clock. And I think this is, we really buried the lead on today's show. I missed winning the Rolling Cash 5 on Saturday night Friday night, which was up to $900,000. I missed it by one number. So really, I mean, I had a great time at the Hungarian Grape Dance with my family on Saturday. We had a great day. There was a harvest festival tour thing that we did. I got to watch and listen to the Guardians win. I mean, the whole weekend was dead to me the second that I kind of missed out on $900,000 by one number. And the worst way you find out is you scan your ticket and it's like you won $300. And then you realize $300 is what you win if you came one number short. At least I got to watch the Browns on Sunday. Woo! Still, that guy had a better sarcastic woo than I did. To go ahead and talk about the Browns, my lack of good fortune, my lack of many things. We welcome on Darryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Darryl, how you doing?
You still had better luck than the Browns are having this season, so you got that going for you.
So, I don't know, man. Losing $900,000 by one ball or one number doesn't feel quite as... Nah, I don't know. Toss up. I don't know, because you lost the Eagles by 4 points, and Kevin Stefanski took 3 points when you needed seven. So, I don't know. So
again, I still say you're much further ahead in the game.
Okay. I just wish I was like further ahead than the Chiefs. You know what I mean?
No, you just wish you had about another $89,700 to go with that $300.
I think your math was very suspect. I said $900,000.
Oh, yeah. Okay, $800 I can't do math today. I just can't.
But that's fine. You know what, though? If you had said 897,000, whatever, or actually be $899,700, I'd probably be more depressed, and I'm more depressed here.
What's more depressing, computing the amount of money that you could have won or looking at Deshaun Watson's statistics?
Yes. Is that, can I say both?
Yeah, you know, no, I'm going to jam you up like you always jam me up. You have to pick one or the other.
I'll still go with the money.
Yeah, here's the thing. That's a smart call.
We're to the point where one good game from Deshaun accomplishes nothing.
$900,000, you don't have to look at his stats anymore, right?
I mean, or I'll just do it from a much nicer house.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I'll have a smoke shack out back. I'll have some yards, maybe a couple animals that eventually I'll slaughter. Pigs and cows, guys. I didn't mean like dogs. I'm not like that, okay? That went dark real quick there. Listen.
That really did get dark real quick. But then again, we are talking about the Browns. So that's kind of the place we're all in.
Yeah, who are slaughtering our dreams on any given Sunday. Let's go to this. I think people have said, sided with Kevin, that, well, you needed to go ahead and trust your defense in that moment. I actually think if you don't get the points on 4th and goal from the 13, I think you're trusting the defense anyways, because then you're putting the Eagles back up against their own end zone, and I actually kind of like that scenario for the defense. How did you see how that played out? I'm not putting that all on Kevin. It's the two false starts that sunk you, but man, I thought that was definitely the nail in the coffin on Sunday.
Well, you can't trust the offense to do anything right now. So I completely understand why Kevin had another one of those moments where he just said, I give up. And I think that that's what that was. Jed Wills doing what Jed Wills typically does. I think that we're getting to a point, and we saw this last week at Washington with the whole fourth down debacle. It was the first time we saw Kevin basically lose it on the sideline in Kevin Stefanski way. I mean, he didn't go berserk, but you could tell for the first time he was really displeased and had a "you've got to be kidding me" moment. And I kind of feel like that him kicking that field goal in that situation, Nick, and I agree with you, you needed a touchdown there. But at that point, it's like, these guys can't do anything right. It's such an incompetent operation. I might as well take the 3 points. He should have taken 3 points earlier in the game as well. I just would stop going for it on fourth down with this offense and take points wherever you can get the points, because this offense is completely incapable of scoring any points.
But other than that, what'd you think about how they played?
It was fantastic.
If we took out every mistake, they're basically like the Chiefs. I would say, I've been saying that for a minute there.
For what, a whole 30 seconds?
Yeah, well, okay, but that's 30 seconds more than like BYU.
Oh, geez, or, oh, man.
Like Virginia. I don't think Virginia's got a great offense right now.
Just downright painful. I mean, and I just don't know how Kevin could sit there today with a straight face and tell us that Deshaun Watson gives them the best chance to win.
I think the money helps. As a man who's missing out on $900,000 right now, if I was paid millions of dollars, I'd lie my ass off too.
You're only missing out on $899,700, Nick, okay? You act like that's a lot.
We finally got it. This is 5 minutes into this interview. All right, so
I finally wrote it out and did the math by hand.
Hey, we got it quicker than the Browns did. So there's an idea I wanted to explore and get your theory on. Because okay. I do think that, like, the obvious answers are bench Deshaun, Ken Dorsey takes over play calling. I also think another...
Or he leaves the building entirely.
Which one? Ken Dorsey?
Yes.
Okay. Right, so we're moving on from fire Andy Dickerson and Ken Dorsey?
I'm in favor of both.
Okay. All right. Here's the thing.
Listen, this offensive line is one of the worst I've seen in years. It's mentally undisciplined and it's physically undisciplined. He's not good at his job.
I can't really refute it. Also, they do have the former right-hand man to Jeff Stoutland in Philadelphia just sitting there. I'm just saying, there's a guy here who's kind of earned an opportunity, but I'm now asking about the assistant O-line coach. I do think, though, if you're not going to bench Deshaun, and if you're not going to if you're not going to give the play calling to Ken Dorsey, could we just go with the full Dorsey offense? What I mean by that is, I think part of the problem is, on any given play, I think Kevin is choosing from the two hemispheres of his brain. What he knows, which is his offense, his whoopee, and what he thinks he knows, which is the Ken Dorsey offense. Like, even if you go back to the Ken, like, just choose one offense, because it feels like neither of them are getting the job done right now. Can I get your opinion on that, sir?
Well, the only thing that is working, and I'm using the term working extremely loosely here, is the run game. That's where they rank the best. I think they're 19th in yards per run, and they're 27th in overall rushing at this point. That's just off the top of my head. But actually, they're 28th in rushing. I'm sorry, 19th in rushing yards per attempt. So by the standards of just the god-awfulness of the multi-32nd out of 32 rankings that this offense currently possesses, the run game is the one thing that actually has a little sign of life to it. And I honestly think that Stefanski should throw out anything Ken Dorsey related and go back to everything Kevin Stefanski wants to do, including running the football. The last thing I want to see is Deshaun Watson throwing a football right now. So if you have to run it right now 50 times a game and you still lose 20-16, so be it. It spares me having to watch Deshaun Watson pretend to play quarterback for the Browns.
Daryl, Aiden Hutchinson out for the season. That was such a... I'm not a Lions fan. The kid's a Michigan man. What can I... You know, like, I don't have a lot of rooting interest there. I felt so bad for Aiden Hutchinson yesterday. That was such a crappy way. That being said, the Lions reportedly calling around the league looking for an elite pass rusher. If the Lions call about Myles Garrett, is there a godfather offer you could not refuse?
No.
So there's nothing they could offer.
He is a once in a generational talent in my view, and you don't trade those. The Browns have one problem: it's quarterback. If they would contemplate fixing that particular situation, even though it's costing them $46 million a year, I think that this would have some chance of being salvaged. But the problem is they're too deep now. You're 1-5. Your season's over. You're not making the playoffs, and you're playing for draft position at this point. And I don't know how Kevin can look guys like Myles Garrett in the locker room straight in the eyes and sell them on the fact that Deshaun gives them the best chance to win. They broke Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper is one of the most professional players I've ever encountered in my nearly three decades of doing this, and they have broken that man. That guy looks like he would rather be anywhere but having to catch footballs from Deshaun Watson right now. The cornerstones are pretty much in place with this team, right? You've got your pass rusher. You've got your top corner. You've got a above-average linebacker on the defensive side of the ball. You've got a solid Pro Bowl-caliber tight end. Your offensive line right now is in tatters. You at least have a left guard who has put together quite the career. The rest of it is patchwork at this point. But like this is not, in my view, a situation where they should blow up the football team, the core of the football team, just to appease the guy that you paid $46 million a year that can barely put his cleats on correctly. Because that's where I'm at with Deshaun. I am out on Deshaun. I have had it. I'm not interested in anything he has to say. I'm not interested in watching him anymore. I'm not, you know, Browns fans had to shelve the moral high ground. The deal was fans would forget about all the checks he had to cut for his alleged off-the-field behavior if he came here and played well. That was the deal. And he is not in any way, shape, or form, lived up to his end of the bargain. I am so done with Deshaun Watson. I'm tired of writing about him. I'm tired of watching him. I'm tired of talking about him because it is a fruitless exercise in futility. Week in, and he can't even throw for 200 yards a game, Nick. And everyone's, oh, well, he went 11 for 12 in the second half. Yeah, and at halftime, he had like 64 yards passing. So... let's not do the trail of cheese where you talk me into Deshaun Watson is salvageable at this point.
Well, you only got 11 games to go there, Daryl. All right, we got to run, buddy. Good stuff. Appreciate you.
You betcha, Nick.
Daryl Ryder there, brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.